I'm Marty Moscowane. Welcome to Radio Times. Pennsylvania Governor Tom Corbett's budget proposal announced last week calls for major funding cuts for three of the four state-related universities, Temple, Penn State, and the University of Pittsburgh, as well as cuts for the 14 colleges and universities in the state system of higher education. This comes just 1 year after these institutions of higher learning had to cut their budgets because of a 20% reduction in state funding. Corbett acknowledged this week that a lot of people are upset at the reduced spending levels, adding, "But that's all the money we have." He also called for a panel to evaluate how to make a higher education more affordable and more accessible. Schools say that they're going to have to hike tuition despite the growing problem of affordability. Well, today in Radio Times, how will Pennsylvania's public colleges and universities survive these cuts, and what will it mean for students, for educators, for the corporate sector, and for the state's economic well-being? And we have two guests who have joined us. Here in our Philadelphia studios is Joni Finney, practice professor of education at the University of Pennsylvania, where she directs the university's Institute for Research in Higher Education, co-author of a new book called Financing American Higher Education in the Era of Globalization. And Joni Finney, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you.
Also with us and joining us by telephone is Daniel Hurley. He's Director of State Relations and Policy Analysis for the American Association of State Colleges and Universities. And Dan Hurley, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good to be here. Good morning.
Good morning. Joni Finney, let me begin with you because we are here in Pennsylvania, and the Corbett budget does propose cuts in higher education for public education, public higher education, I should say, in Pennsylvania. Can you have an educated workforce and cut money to state colleges and universities? Can you have both?
No, you can't have both. At some point, we have to determine where the cuts are causing real damage. Now, there's certainly room for productivity increases in higher education, and we should talk about that at some point. But we have to look at how the state is investing its overall resources and how higher education is faring in relationship to that for the economy and for individual opportunity.
But you're saying we don't know that yet. We don't know the answer to that yet.
No.
Dan, I'm curious, we're talking about Pennsylvania, but is this happening in other states across the country?
No, not necessarily. Certainly Pennsylvania, you know, last year the governor came out with a 50% budget cut proposal for higher ed. To my knowledge, that was the largest ever proposed in history. Ultimately, I think cooler heads prevailed in the legislature and ended up being around 18 to 20%.
Right.
But Pennsylvania wasn't alone last year. There was a number of other states that cut higher ed double digits. This year, Pennsylvania and Governor Corbett is out in front of the pack by a long shot in terms of proposed cuts. There's actually a lot of governors on both sides of the aisle that are actually trying to protect funding. Just because this, you know, this is about year four at least for significant cuts, and Pennsylvania has cut state higher ed funding at four times the average over the past 5 years, four times higher. And so this isn't a one-year vacuum. It's a successive trend. That's pretty alarming.
Well, let me go back to you, Joni. I don't want to get too deep in the weeds here, but Pennsylvania has four state-related universities and 14 colleges and universities in the state system of higher education. What do we need to know about these two groups of higher ed?
And it has a segment of community colleges as well. The state-related institutions have reduced state support, and they charge higher levels of tuition. And I think it's much more a matter of semantics. These are public institutions, and the public thinks of them as public institutions. They were built by grants given by the federal government and state support over time. So Pennsylvania is the only state that has this kind of structure. So I think we're really splitting hairs here. These are all public institutions. Some are public research universities, and some are public state colleges and universities.
Well, let me go back to you, Dan Hurley, because I was reading actually in the local paper here that Temple University president said that they are cutting operating costs of something like $76 million over a three-year period. Is there fat in the system?
I think we're well beyond that period. In fact, you know, I mean, there were certainly a lot of, you know, accusations in years gone by that that's the case, and that may have been the case, but this issue of cost containment, efficiency, cost reduction has been going on for many years, with ultimately hundreds of millions of dollars cut from within the Pennsylvania state higher ed system overall. So the new language is cutting into the bone, and as much as, you know, the prideful state university leaders are, they don't like to talk about a diminishment of quality, but I think we may be getting to that point where, you know, the undergraduate teaching and learning mission may be impinged a bit because of all the cuts that have taken place and will be taking place.
Joni Finney, do you see fat in the system?
I don't see fat as much as a lack of focus and a lack of priorities. And so when you don't have a plan for your higher education system in terms of where it's going in the future, statewide plan, and how it's going to meet the needs of the population, it's hard to answer the question about are they spending the money on the right activities or the right programs. And I don't think we know the answer to that question. So I think there's an opportunity to probably redirect resources to higher need areas and to higher need students. But the most important thing the state has to do is to decide if higher education is going to be important and what kind of economy and future they want Pennsylvania to have.
And I do want to get back to that, but let me talk about tuition. And actually, Dan, I'll put this to you, and I'll use Penn State as an example. The tuition for Penn State has actually doubled in about the last 10 years, from about $7,000 to about $15,000 today. What explains that dramatic increase in tuition?
Well, I don't know the details specifically about Penn State, but it is my guess, as it is, and I have knowledge of the 14 state system universities, and of course the trend nationally is it simply represents a cost shift in who pays for a public higher education from states to students and families. And, you know, a lot of, you know, citizens, students, families, they read all the headlines about skyrocketing tuition, but a real, and that is the case, certainly, mm-hmm. but, you know, a real focal point is how much are universities actually spending per student? And nationally, in the last few years, that number has been flat or even declining in most cases. And so that additional, so for example, in Pennsylvania, last year they cut, the state cut $800 per student in state funding. The 14 state system universities increased tuition about $436. Okay, so tuition is definitely going up, but it's not even coming close to making up for the state the cuts in state funding.
To you, though, Joni Finney, what do you think explains this increase? And we're talking about public education. It's mm-hmm. also true in private universities.
Correct.
As well. What are the cost drivers here?
The cost drivers are, you know, tuition has gone up, first of all, in good times, good economies, and bad economies. So I think it's really important to note that universities have a pattern of raising tuition beyond rates of inflation and growth in family income since 1990. So we've seen universities have a lot of ideas and they have a lot of ways they want to spend this money. And so the name of the game is to get as much money as you can and spend what you have. That's really sort of the economics of higher education. And Pennsylvania went into this recession fairly strong mm-hmm. in terms of total overall revenue. That includes tuition and state appropriation. So they had more money per FTE, both at the state colleges and public research universities, than the U.S. average in many other states. So we need to get, I think, a real handle on the tuition question, but you can't solve the finance piece of this with tuition alone. You've got to look at the whole revenue pie.
And I understand that, but I also was reading that administrative costs have gone up, and I wonder whether these tuition increases reflect that.
Yes. There's data to suggest from the National Delta Cost Project study that administrative costs have gone up, amenities have gone up at many colleges and universities, and institutional financial aid, and instructional costs have gone down. So we have to question the way colleges and universities are using the money.
And let me toss that back to you, Dan Hurley, which is, and again, just picking up on what Joni Finney was saying, but also what I was reading, which is that the teaching load for a lot of professors at, say, colleges and universities has been dropping.
I actually would question that, at least in the last year or two. And a lot of times, again, depending on what you're reading, there's, a common effort on behalf of media to start off with what's going on at either private research universities or state research flagships, and that might be the case. But at the vast majority in public higher education, teaching loads, I think, have been increasing modestly in the last couple of years. There certainly has been a lot of attention on how and where universities spend money. And I think there's been some positive movement. Joni's very much right in that there's a lot of appropriate criticism in terms of administrative bloat. The latest numbers I've seen is actually, despite state funding cost or spending in a way, there's been actually a modest bump in instructional spending, which is good. Mm-hmm. I think the greatest cost pressure, like all of the public sector, is on employee health care and pensions, and so there's a lot of effort there to for institutions to engage their collective bargaining units to say, hey, you need to pony up a little bit more in terms of your share in terms of health care cost or contributions to pension programs.
Is that true, Joni, from your perspective, that some of these benefit costs are also driving?
That's right. I mean, personnel costs make up probably 80% of the budget of colleges and universities. And so benefits is a big part of that, and defined benefits programs are a significant driver of cost increases. So I think we have to get a handle on that and the personnel costs, but it raises the question about how we use faculty and what they do and what their role is. Again, I don't think we can solve this problem through just efficiencies in the way we're doing business now. I think we're going to have to think about other alternatives to delivering high quality education.
And I want to pick up on that after this very short break, and that's Joni Finney. She's a practice professor of education at the University of Pennsylvania, where she directs the university's Institute for Research in Higher Education. Also with us is Dan Hurley. He's director of state relations and policy analysis for the American Association of State Colleges and Universities. And we are talking about a whole host of things, including rising tuition costs for state universities and colleges, Pennsylvania Governor Tom Corbett's budget proposal calling for more cuts in state education. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Is it possible to improve efficiencies and effectiveness of Pennsylvania state colleges and universities? 1-888-477-9499. We'll be right back.
Mozart returns to the Opera Company of Philadelphia stage in February with a new production of the comic opera, The Abduction from the Seraglio. Set in the 1920s and using silent film as a backdrop, Abduction runs in five performances, February 17th through 26th at the Academy of Music. For information, 215-893-1018 or operaphila.org. The Opera Company of Philadelphia supports WHYY.
On the next Fresh Air, why the primary process is so confusing with different voting systems in different states. A look at the American primary process on the next Fresh Air.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
The Pennsylvania Academy of the Fine Arts supports WHYY. On view now through April 15th, Henry Ossawa Tanner, Modern Spirit, an exhibition featuring more than 100 works by the legendary African-American artist, including paintings shown in the U.S. for the first time. Modern Spirit revisits Tanner's extraordinary career as a critically acclaimed artist in the United States and France at the turn of the 20th century. For details, 215-972-7600 or PAFA.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. President Obama called out universities and colleges last month in a State of the Union address, saying we can't keep subsidizing skyrocketing tuition. Although, interestingly, Pennsylvania Governor Tom Corbett has called for steep cuts in funding for higher education, something that he did last year. We are focusing on Pennsylvania state colleges and universities. Can funding be cut while improving the quality of education? And again, our guests are Dan Hurley and Joni Finney, and we have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Dan, let me go back to you. We actually got an email from an adjunct professor who teaches in Pennsylvania saying that he and other adjuncts are paid about $2,000 to teach a college class in Pennsylvania, essentially saying that colleges and universities rely a lot on these adjunct professors, frankly, a lot on cheap labor. Is that a problem?
It can be a problem. And the big question nationally is, at what point do you cross that threshold when you look at a whole institution broadly, you know, where there might be an impact? Certainly, it's unfair to the faculty that are teaching. I've done that myself, and it is very cheap labor. Unfortunately, that's been the primary cost containment measure by institutions. There's been a lot of effort to contain costs on the business side of the enterprise through, like, collaborative purchasing, energy management, things like that. A lot of those have been done, and so now a lot of the focus is to the academic side, and we'll talk a little bit about some innovative things that are occurring. But in the meantime, there's been a lot of great use of adjunct faculty, and there has been some research that suggests that for those key freshman gateway courses, that student learning outcomes can be a little bit lower if taught by, you know, graduate assistants or part-time adjuncts as opposed to full-time, long-standing professors.
But, Joni, we're probably talking about minimum wage here when you add up all the time that it takes to teach a college course.
Yeah, and I don't think this reflects on the adjunct faculty. It reflects on the fact that they're probably doing this for four or five institutions to try to piece a living together. And we tend to isolate adjunct faculty from the rest of the faculty so they don't have a clear sense of what we want in those courses to begin with. And so the model is wrong. It doesn't have anything to do with the qualifications of those people teaching.
Let me go back to you, Joni Finney, because I know that you have looked at some other states and also have a probably a more global perspective on how to improve higher education among states, but also how to improve accessibility, graduation rates. And I know that Maryland is a state that is at least beginning to look at this. Are there some lessons from Maryland?
There are some lessons from Maryland. And in fact, there will be a report released tomorrow in Maryland about their higher education system and the strengths and weaknesses of it. One of the strengths of Maryland is that they have political consensus. They have a working relationship between the governor, the legislature, the system chancellor, and the community colleges, and the private institutions. So they can talk to each other, and they've had this longstanding trust, and I can't overestimate how important that is in working through these difficult policy issues. But one of the things they did was pass a report called, known in Maryland as the Bohannon Commission report, named after Representative Bohannon, or the Funding Commission report. And they passed this right before the recession, and it had very key elements in it. First of all, it built off of clear goals that Maryland had set for how many college graduates they needed in the future. Mm-hmm. And Maryland has decided that they're going to be one of the top information economies in the world. And they have set their goals so they know how many people they need to educate at every degree level. And so this finance plan linked very much to achieving those goals. The first thing they did in Maryland in 2007 is the state legislature, and this was a bipartisan support, passed a corporate income tax that was reserved for higher education, essentially creating a public endowment so that higher education didn't suffer from the economic ups and downs of the economy, and that it would be invested in those times when the economy was slow. Now, so far, that hasn't created a huge amount of money because the economy hasn't grown that much. But over time, it will. It's an important step. The second thing they did was link growth in tuition in Maryland to growth in median family income, so that families knew, so that tuition was predictable in terms of what they would expect to pay in higher education. And institutions knew generally what revenue they would get from student and families. And so between this corporate piece and this tuition piece and some other pieces, they have a plan on the table that I think will see them into the future.
Well, Dan Hurley, let me give you a chance to weigh in on that. Do you see that as a model that Pennsylvania and other states could use?
Very much so, yeah. Maryland has been singled out for many years for all those reasons that Joni just mentioned. And that issue of stability is so key and allows universities to plan long-term. You think about it, I mean, these universities are huge operations. And imagine even being a private sector entity and being told that, you know, there's going to be this huge cut to your revenue stream. At the same time, you need to boost production. And that's what's happened. And there's been 14 years in a row of student enrollment increases that are happening at the same time that states are being cut. So any effort in that stability is helpful. One thing I would point out that's had its ups and downs over at least the last three decades is this issue of state performance-based funding to incentivize institutions to meet state goals. And it's definitely back in vogue. There's nearly about 20 states that are looking at it this year to implement it. And in the Pennsylvania, not as a state, but as the state system, the 14 university system, they actually have in place a pretty sharp model that was recently updated, and it incentivizes the universities on outcomes, not inputs like enrollment, but outcomes like degree completions and awards universities higher dollars for science, technology, engineering graduates, and then also rewards them on other indicators such as private fundraising. So I think that's key as well. That's definitely something that Pennsylvania is, I think, at the leading edge of nationally.
Would you say Pennsylvania is at the leading edge of this?
Yes. In fact, the Lumina Foundation for Education, a major higher education foundation, points to the Pennsylvania model a lot. So that's also what was so frustrating about the governor's announcement. There seemed to be no connection between the cuts in place and the performance of institutions, when the state colleges and universities have worked very carefully to construct a performance system that encourages them to improve retention rates and improve graduation rates and improve the participation and completion of low-income and minority students.
Let me go back to you, Joni, and I was looking at a list of proposals or ideas that you have in terms of how to improve higher education, cutting non-effective programs, using technology better, streamlining the curriculum, make sure that students don't take too many credits. I frankly was surprised to read that. But these are all ways you think that will improve education and also give students what it is that they need to graduate?
Exactly. In fact, we know there are enough models now of very sophisticated technology-delivered learning experiences. And that's a part of the Maryland story, too, is they have redesigned a number of undergraduate freshman courses where students tend to have trouble getting through, like math and science. And in this redesign effort, you can increase quality and spend a lot less per student So we have these models in place. So some states are exploring that on a statewide level. In fact, in Virginia, they're doing this for all of remedial education in the community colleges so that it's just-in-time remedial education. You don't have to do it the full semester. You take credit-bearing courses with it. It's as much as you need, and you move into regular coursework. So that's very important. The excess credit hours is important. I think that's one issue that the state colleges and universities of Pennsylvania have addressed, the state systems. I'm not sure the state-related have been a part of that because they're sort of out on their own. But that's a huge problem nationally. Most students take 20 to 25% more credit hours than they need for graduation.
I was frankly very surprised to read that. Dan, anything you want to add to that? And I do want to get some callers in on the conversation.
No, those are all very key points, and that there's certainly some accountability needed on the part of institutions, but also on the part of students as well. And that issue of those excess credits is a big deal, and a lot of times, the universities are attacked for the inefficiency and poor graduation rates and all that, when in fact it's a matter of students, changing majors and dealing with other life issues that go way overboard. So one thing that we're trying to promote here through our association is the practice, putting in place some institutional policies and practices that require more kind of joint accountability on the part of students and the advising system at the institutional level to make sure that they have graduation plans in place so that they can graduate, right on that mark of 120 credits and not, graduate with many more.
Yeah, Joan, you wanted to add something?
I did want to add something to that. I like the idea of accountability for students, but we also have to have accountability for institutions. I will say in a project that I'm working on right now, looking at four institutions and the excess credit hours that students have, it's really clear that there is no pathway through the curriculum. And so this has a lot to do with faculty, too, making a curriculum that's strong, coherent, and that students move through. The increase in requirements has a lot more to do with faculty, what faculty want to teach rather than what students need to learn. And so we've got to really look at the curricular coherence.
And we are talking about how to improve the efficiencies and effectiveness of Pennsylvania state colleges and universities with Joni Finney from the University of Pennsylvania and with Dan Hurley from the American Association of State Colleges and Universities. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. We want to know what you think will improve our colleges and universities, state colleges and universities here in Pennsylvania. Let's get Roger from King of Prussia to join us. And Roger, go ahead. You're on the air.
This subject drives me crazy. I started late in life. I have a daughter who was applied to and was accepted to 10 separate colleges all across the state of Pennsylvania. Being that I only have a year and a half of college long time ago, I'm not going to admit to when, I actually put together a Excel file to look at all the colleges and what it was going to cost for tuition, room and board, which hasn't been discussed in this process right now today. And she was accepted to Drexel, Temple, Shippensburg, Westchester, Arcadia, Bloomsburg, Albright, Penn State, Maine, which nobody gets accepted to. And when you factor in the room and board, Penn State, Albright, Penn State is $26,000. Albright is $40,000. Drexel, $51,000. Temple, $25,000. Now, because she had a GPA in...
Well, you know what, Roger, and first of all, congratulations on your daughter getting into all those colleges here in Pennsylvania. Just if you can ask your question, that would be great.
Why is it that the... And I'm an independent voter, but why is the Republicans... continuously try to cut people who are normal folks out of the picture.
Okay.
My wife is disabled. I'm the sole breadwinner, and this is difficult. And my daughter, I don't want her graduating with a mortgage payment.
Well, and that's a very good point. And let me give Joni Finney a chance to weigh in on that. Joni?
Roger, sadly, this is not just a Republican problem. If you look at other states around the country, both R's and D's have their share of problems and are passing costs on to students. I will say that Pennsylvania relies more heavily on dollars from students and families to pay the overall cost of education than most other states. They are way above the national average. So in terms of state dollars, the state has underinvested and relied on students and families to pick up more. But you're right. We have to look at more than tuition. We have to look at room and board. We have to look at the total cost of education. A couple of years back, Pennsylvania received an F in a national report card on affordability for all of the reasons that you just outlined.
Dan, you want to weigh in on this at all?
Well, yeah, just to put some context again on Pennsylvania, this is certainly a national issue, but in terms of state support, it's definitely an outlier. Per capita, state support for higher education is about two-thirds of what it is nationally, okay? So it's definitely under there. And the result is, of course, as Joni said, tuition is higher in the state. For the current year, for public four-year universities, it cost about $12,000 in tuition fees. $12,000 in Pennsylvania opposed to about $8,200 nationally. So, again, a full third higher. One thing I would recommend to the caller, to everyone out there, is it can be very alarming when you look at, you know, the published brochure price or online prices of these institutions. But be sure, and maybe the caller was going to go there, but to look at really what the net price is. And it's very important to understand that across, you know, certainly the higher education sector, a lot of the revenues that are generated from tuition increases, a significant proportion are funneled back into student financial aid. So, you know, the website or the brochure might say it costs $25,000 when on average it costs considerably less than that. The real pinch, though, when we may get to this, is the American middle class, and it's those, you know, individuals that are from the, you know, upper, lower to middle income that don't have the financial wherewithal, but then to pay for college, and then don't meet the eligibility standards for need-based grant programs.
Well, and I want to. We have about a minute before a second break here, Joni Finney. But I was thinking about the middle class, and often we are told that a college education or advanced degrees is a ticket to the middle class. I don't know if that's true anymore. Is it?
Yes. I mean, it's the best ticket that we have into the American middle class. I will say there's no guarantee that if you have some education beyond high school that you will be in the American middle class. But there's a pretty sure guarantee that if you don't have any post-secondary education or a high school diploma, your income will decline, and that's been the trend. So it's our best protection in terms of getting people into the middle class. So we have to worry both about low-income Americans as well as middle-income Americans, and we aren't doing enough on that front. Although I will give Pennsylvania credit because we have one of the state's largest need-based financial aid programs in the country. And students can take that money to private colleges and universities. They can take it to public. So that's a strength.
And we're going to take another short break and then get back to our conversation with Joni Finney and also with Daniel Hurley and take some more calls at 1-888-477-9499. We are taking a look at Pennsylvania's state colleges and universities. How can they be more efficient and more effective? 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Atlantic City Convention and Visitors Authority supports WHYY and presents the 4th Annual Atlantic City Restaurant Week, March 4th through 10th. Food lovers can experience ethnic, gourmet, seafood, steakhouse, or casual restaurants. There are dozens of locations providing a variety of dining selections. For more information, menus, reservations, and a list of participating restaurants, acrestaurantweek.com. Sponsored in part by a grant from the New Jersey Division of Travel and Tourism.
This is WHYY's President Bill Morazzo with a big thank you. Thank you to the more than 8,000 of you who made the choice to support our winter membership campaign. Your generosity not only produced $800,000 that can now be used to deepen your public media experience, but stands as a ringing endorsement to this unique brand of trusted news and information. If you haven't had the chance to express your membership support, I invite you to do so by visiting whyy.org. Thank you.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. Mitt Romney should be feeling right at home in Michigan, where he was raised and where the next primary will be held. Instead, he finds himself in a real contest with Rick Santorum. Also, you can call him Dr. George Clinton. The funk master drops in on Berklee School of Music classes and gets a high honor. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen, talking with Dan Hurley, joining us by telephone, Director of State Relations and Policy Analysis for the American Association of State Colleges and Universities. Here with us in our Philadelphia studios is Joni Finney, Practice Professor of Education at the University of Pennsylvania, where she directs the university's Institute for Research on Higher Education. We are talking about higher education in the state of Pennsylvania, focusing on the public universities and colleges. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Let me get Bob from media to join our conversation. And Bob, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, I had a question about faculty compensation. I know some professors at various and sundry schools, some of the state schools in our neighborhood here in suburban Philadelphia. They work 2 days a week. Now, they're 10-hour days, but we have a nine-month, they only work for 9 months a year, and probably pretty generous benefits and things like that. So my question to you would be, what other business has a model like that besides, I would imagine, school teachers, that we can afford something like that?
Bob, just a quick question. What do they get paid? Do you know?
That I don't know, and I think that's something else that should be common knowledge. I mean, if there's state-supported schools, shouldn't we be aware of what the people are being paid?
It's a fair question, but are you assuming that they're being paid, they're being overpaid?
That's
your assumption?
Yeah, I really don't know. I'm okay. Just assuming that it's pretty decent, but it's the nine-month thing. I mean, I'd like to have an arrangement like that.
Let me see what Dan Hurley says. Dan?
Well, I think that image that the caller portrays is certainly a symbolic one, and I'd like to think it's changed a bit in the last few years. I will say I think that while the that might be the case at very, very large research intensive universities that often again in the public's eyes serve as the example of what actually is taking place. By and large, across where most students attend, the regional 4-year state universities, that is definitely not the case. While professors might be on campus 2 days a week, they're teaching a lot of courses during those 2 days and doing a lot of online work and grading and assessment and some administrative work, some student counseling. Some of the research schools, the faculty are engaged in research. So I think that portrayal is a little bit outdated, but there's absolutely no doubt there continues to be scrutiny, and higher education leaders get that message, and they may share that same sentiment, but also have to work within the confines of the academy and within collective bargaining units to try to bump that teaching load up and that efficiency up over time.
Well, let me go back to you, Joni, actually going back to some of your recommendations, which I mentioned earlier, and you also recommend increasing the teaching hours for faculty.
Well, in many institutions around the country, teaching loads have decreased since the 1980s. And I think it's really a matter of what outcome are we getting by this investment of time from faculty? Where's the focus of their interest? Faculty at every institution want to spend more and more time on research and fewer hours on teaching. And it's because all the rewards go to research universities and all the perks go to research universities and the best-paying jobs at research universities. And we've got to start rewarding faculty as we should be doing in Pennsylvania, who are increasing graduation rates, who are getting more students through that are underserved, and making Pennsylvania a better place.
But you're talking, and you've said this several times, and it's about goals. What is the mission? What is the purpose? What are the reasons for these state college universities?
That's right. And I think every time the state appropriates dollars to a research university versus a state college, there's a big difference in the amount of money going to one versus another. That is a Pennsylvania subsidy for research. So it is fair to ask, what are we buying? And is that what the state needs to be competitive and to move into a global economy? Those questions have not been raised in Pennsylvania. And I hope that this commission that Governor Corbett has announced will begin to raise some of those issues.
Let me, Bob, thanks for the call. Let's see what Zach from Mount Airy has to say. Zach, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty.
Hi there.
I'm a Temple grad student, and all I see is general waste and what's being spent at Temple. I see these beautiful dorms, palace-like dorms being built. The food on campus is incredible. My professors only teach one class a week. And what I see being done is I don't understand how we can talk about this being an issue of the state's not funding when all these things are being spent on things that frankly have nothing to do with education.
Well, Zach, again, I'm going to toss your question first to Dan Hurley and then also to Joni Finney. We're talking about the kind of perks at universities.
Well, I don't know if there are enough they call it perks. I would certainly, concur that it would be an issue if you have if it's the case, a full-time professor teaching one course. If that's indeed the case, there's an issue there. There is a lot of critique about the fancy dorms, about climbing walls, about nice dining units, etc. But I would just say that, higher education, public and private in this country, is very much market-based, it's consumer-based, and when they do, the market research and ask students, what do you want as a freshman, 18 to 22-year-old or so, living on a college campus, these are the types of amenities that they want and are paying for, I think that, needs to be said, and that's not, students don't necessarily have to live in the halls or eat on campus, but choose to do so. So I think the real focus needs to be in the classroom and how those dollars are being spent, not necessarily on those auxiliary functions.
But would you agree, Joni, that students and their families are looking for certain amenities, and if a university isn't wired and doesn't have a climbing wall, that's held against them?
I think that has been a cost driver, but I think in this economy that's now being overstated. I think students and families are looking for value, and value in terms of high-quality education and something that will get you into the workforce and will guarantee that you can move forward in your life. So I think the incentives will begin to change just because of the economic realities. And one of the problems is that Pennsylvania doesn't have many low-cost options for students that are high value. And that is, again, something that I think the governor and his commission should consider.
Does that mean community colleges taking a harder and better look at the role of community colleges?
That's correct. A long time ago, well, not that many years ago, actually, the past president of Penn State University, Penn State has a system of branch campuses across the state. And most of those branch campuses have now been turned into four-year institutions. That is a very high-cost solution for providing more education for Pennsylvanians. Instead, the state should have looked more seriously at the expansion of community colleges and transfer agreements with four-year institutions. But we made that mistake in a time when we had money and when Pennsylvania was trying to solidify its political support throughout the state of Pennsylvania. And now we're living with the consequences of that.
And that's Joni Finney, who joins us along with Dan Hurley. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Let me get, looks like John from West Philadelphia to join us. And John, go ahead, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
I teach biology at Community College of Philadelphia, and I'm the co-president of the union that represents the faculty and staff there. And one of the things that's happened here at CCP has been that the administration has drastically increased its numbers over the last 14 years, and the percentage of the salary budget that is spent on administration has gone from 14% to 21% during that period of time. And if they had kept it at 14%, they could have saved $30 million during that period of time. Instead, they spent it on lots of administrators, and now they're saying that the faculty and staff have to make drastic increases in their payments for medical plans.
Well, John, let me take your call, and perhaps I'll toss that first to you, Joni Finney, only because we were just talking about community colleges.
Yeah, it really depends what's count as administrative. For the students we're serving today, increasingly today, we need more student support services. We need more academic advising and some of those other services. But if it's being spent simply on administrators that aren't adding value to that bottom line in terms of student completion, then I think there is an issue. But we're going to have to spend some additional money to educate students who have been generally underserved in higher education.
John, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Dan Hurley, let me ask you something that one of our callers raised earlier about transparency. And if we're talking about publicly funded colleges and universities, should there be more transparency about how the money is spent, who is being paid what?
Yeah, I think there is, and there should be, and has been. I mean, the faculty salaries. I think when you ask the public about transparency data, that's probably not a top tier issue. More, to the point, or what is the actual net cost of attending a given college or university? What are the odds that I will graduate within 6 years with a 4-year degree, or within 3 years with a 2-year degree? What percentage of the graduates go on to get jobs, things like that. And so you saw President Obama state in his State of the Union a desire for even more transparency on some of those issues. There is, if you were to go online, something that the U.S. Department of Education spearheaded, called the College Navigator, has a lot of data, institutional data across the country. And then at the public 4-year level, the two major associations teamed up a number of years ago to put something called together the Voluntary System of Accountability. And we have good participation in that you go online to a university and you'll see something called the College Portrait that has a lot of that key data.
Would you agree, Joni, there's enough transparency and openness?
I think all the things that Dan mentioned are important, and they are a step in the right direction. But I don't think we've gotten that information and data to the public. I think students, when they walk into a college, have no idea how much they'll actually have to pay. Financial aid is a morass, and it's very difficult to work through, even though the federal government has taken some steps to simplify it. And then the state also requires the federal form. So it's very difficult for people to get through. And we don't have the kind of transparency that we need at the state-related schools. And that was part of the issue that was brought up in the whole scandal of Penn State. And so we need to be much more transparent about public dollars and how they're being used.
I'm thinking of that Amherst model in Western Pennsylvania, Western Massachusetts, where people can attend several different colleges depending on what they want. Is that something you think, Joni, that would work in Pennsylvania?
I think it would be very difficult because we don't have the kind of agreements set up so students can easily transfer courses. And that's been one of the problems, even for students at community colleges, being able to transfer those courses into a 4-year institution. So those are the issues. Those are the things that will get us more productivity if we focus on those kinds of things. We'll get more learning for every dollar spent if we can figure out how to make the curriculum better, if we can make sure students stay in higher education, make sure their credits can transfer, make sure they have access to the information so that they can make a decision about the right institution to attend.
And to you, Dan, I'm thinking about, and we often talk about a two-year program or a four-year program. I mean, what about a three-year program? Why do degrees have to be tied either to or 4 years?
Yeah, well, that's certainly been the agrarian model of, you know, taking the summers off. I personally am not a big fan of the three-year degree just because I think it misses such a huge part of the student demographic out there. You know, the fact is people do need to work to, you know, part-time at least to fund higher education, let alone other living expenses, take care of family responsibilities, et cetera. And those students who actually have the academic wherewithal, let alone the financial wherewithal, to enter at age 18 and go full-time year-round for 3 years is a remarkably small segment. And you know, it's been alluded to this, you know, the role of community colleges and more lower-cost, high-quality institutions. That's what we need to focus on given the demographics in this country in terms of, you know, a bulge of students, population growth, and a lot of students coming from low-income households.
Yeah, I got to jump in here, Joni. I know you wanted to say something very briefly. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I, you know what? I just lost it.
It was about three-year degree program.
Oh yeah, thank you. I think there are many students who could benefit from a three-year degree option. When I was in California a few years ago, we did a study of the number of students going into the University of California system with a semester or more of college credits. And there were more than 25%. So there are many students who should be put on a three-year track, and that should be their option. And if they don't want that, then they can choose a private four-year school.
Well, much more to talk about. Thank you both, Joni Finney, for joining us today on Radio Times, and Dan Hurley as well. We appreciate those phone calls to Radio Times. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times to learn much more about this program. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. We'll be right back.